Morning, everybody. We're going to spend a little bit of time looking at 1 Peter and his letter to what he called the elect exiles, or he also uses the term the diaspora, the dispersion. But we're going to focus on little parts of it, specifically talk about being tested and how we are really taught by God through testing. So he allows us to be tested, not to overcome us, but to make us stronger and to make us, more courageous and more committed and more faithful and trustworthy. Just take a moment. I don't know if everybody else has, over the last number of days, when you've had a chance, either getting caught up in news of the war in Ukraine, or watching videos of it. If you're like me, if you've been old enough, like me, you've seen this before. This isn't new to us. We've seen it throughout our lives, old enough to remember even a little bit of Vietnam, and all of the, what we might think of since World War II, all of the smaller wars that have happened. But these smaller wars are just as impactful on these local places as World War I, World War II was, that encompassed most of the globe. And the thing I have been most, impressed by, obviously people have mentioned about how strong and courageous the Ukrainians have been, especially in the face of overwhelming odds, that everybody's been saying, almost every day, well, I'll probably fall tonight, probably fall today, because they have one to maybe four or five people. They have very little in terms of weaponry and comparing to Russia. And so it's just kind of like, it's just a matter of time. And yet their courage and their commitment to their homeland, their families, has been, something that, especially for those of us who want to follow God, this is an example for us to learn from, even if we think they're going to fall. And how many of them, people have kind of put their families on trains or cars to get out of harm's way and then have stayed, the average citizen stayed behind and taken up a gun to protect their city and their homes. And even though for Christians, our warfare is not the same, it's not one with weapons, it is a warfare nonetheless. God talks about that in a number of places. Not only does Paul preach to us about the weapons of our warfare, but also God talks to us and Paul writes about putting on the whole armor of God that we might be able to fight. But I think the most impressive things that we ought to emulate is commitment and devotion and steadfastness, especially when, just like we've been talking on Wednesday nights with Joshua leading the people to take over Canaan, many times they might have been had bigger forces against them. But God said one of them can withstand 1,000 when God is on our side. And so we need to remember that. And so all the times that he tells us to have courage and to be strong, to be faithful and to be steadfast, I think this is an example of that. It reminded me of what Hebrews 11 talks about with Abraham. It talks about the faith of Abraham and how he obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. So he was called to leave his family, leave his homeland, go to a new place God was calling him to a place where he would be a stranger. So he went out not knowing where he was going, and by faith he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land. Though it wasn't the land of promise going to be to his kids and his offspring, but it wasn't his, it was other people's. And he's living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise, for he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. And I think that idea, and all through Hebrews 11, all of these people were looking forward to that city of God. And we don't get there without fighting the good fight. It is not really possible for us to go through this life without fighting the good fight, fighting the warfare that he talks about. It is not done with weapons. It is done with the Word of God. It is the sword of the Spirit to help us and remind us of where we are going and to not be afraid. And I think this is kind of a secondary, and this is going to fit in today's lesson. This really fits, I think, as another example of what the last couple of years have been when people have been so afraid of a virus, of dying from a virus. And like, well, you know, we don't sometimes treat sickness the way we would treat a war. We don't think we have to be as courageous. And yet, the truth is, these are all afflictions and these are all troubles. And the other thing, especially I've been focusing the last couple of weeks on younger people, and I've probably been doing that for a while, how God directs our paths. And for those who are younger who don't remember sitting and watching and looking at war or looking at devastation on the news or reading about it in a paper or in an article, understand this isn't new. This isn't unusual. This is what this world is. And it has always been this way all through history. It will always be this way until God decides it's done. And so don't think something unusual has happened, that God is not with us, that God is not here, and that he does not understand all the difficulties we face. Because he does. And he has. He has all through Israel's history. And that was given to us to help us understand how much God understands and how much he knows. And so before I get into to 1 Peter, I want to talk and just remind us of a couple of examples. And specifically in the last couple of years, I think the afflictions of sickness and the fear of being sick is not, again, anything new. Jesus himself talks about the testing that happens by sickness. In fact, it's mentioned at least four or five times in the Gospel of Matthew about how people were tested by these things. It says in Matthew 4:24, his fame spread throughout all Syria, and they brought him all the sick, those afflicted with various diseases and pains, those oppressed by demons, those having seizures and paralytics, and he healed them. They came to him because they understood who he was, and they understood his power over the flesh. And the point of all that wasn't simply to heal everybody's flesh, because everybody he healed still was going to get sick and die later. It was to demonstrate his power and authority over this world and over this flesh, but to help us see something much greater and bigger, that he's pointing us not towards having a better body that doesn't get sick, but an eternal body that does not have the temptations and weaknesses of the flesh. And so he is trying to get us to look for that and look to that. And so he demonstrated his power over all these things. And they came to him for those reasons, afflicted with all of these things. And scriptures talk about afflictions as being a test, as being tested by God with afflictions. And so, and the second one that we're going to look at here, and I think this really applies to what we look at in Russia and Ukraine and some what could happen in other places. And very often, as Americans, almost all the wars, even for those of us old enough to remember back to World War II or the Korean War, and our wars haven't been fought on our land. We've lost our people. We've lost our children, we've lost our siblings, we've lost relatives, but it hasn't devastated our land the way it has some other lands. But we have a little bit of a unique place in that. Lots of countries all over the world have faced devastation by war. And I don't think there's any promise that North America isn't going to have it as well. We can go back further, and we've seen it in our own country, in Civil War and even Revolutionary War and things. But In Judges chapter 3, God talked about what he was doing by leaving some of the nations that were surrounding Israel when after they had defeated all the armies and defeated all their kings and they all went to their lands. But he talks about why many of the other nations were left behind. And some of it was just the unfaithfulness of the Israelites. And some of it was God testing them. He says, now these are the nations that the Lord left to test Israel by them. That is, all in Israel who had not experienced all the wars in Canaan. Now, how many of us could say we're those people? We haven't experienced those wars. Some of us might have fought, might have been in the army, might have been in military service. Some might have seen warfare. But most of us, unless we were in the military fighting, have never experienced war other than watching it or hearing about it. And the question is, would we be faithful if we were faced with it? And he talks about it with them. He says, it was only in order that the generation of the people of Israel might know war, to teach war to those who had not known it before. These are the nations, the five lords of the Philistines and all of the Canaanites and the Sidonians and the Hivites who lived on Mount Lebanon from Mount Baal Hermon as far as Lebo Hamath. They were for the testing of Israel to know whether Israel would obey the commandments of the Lord, which he commanded their fathers by the hand of Moses. So the people of Israel lived among the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, and their daughters took them, they took to themselves for wives, and their own daughters they gave to their sons, and they served their gods. Now, the very last couple of sentences there make point of the fact that they failed the test often. And that's often what the book of Judges is about, how these generations failed the test. When things were hard, they did not obey God. They tried to find an easy way to make life easier for them, rather than do what God said. And that is a test. And every time it happens to us, and in every way it happens to us, it is a test that God looks at, and he probably knows whether we'll pass or not pass, more than us. Testing often is for us as much as it is for God, probably more so for us than for God. For us, once we face a test and we overcome that test, then we know that I can do this. Because until we face a test, sometimes we're not sure. Can I be faithful when I am confronted with difficulties, troubles, afflictions, war? Can I still be righteous and godly in the face of all these terrible troubles? Well, he hasn't asked us in most of our lifetimes. He hasn't placed most of this burden upon us. But we've had it last couple of years with the afflictions of sickness. And now we see it in war. And I think a lot of people, they worry is how does this spill? Does it continue to unfold? Because there are clearly other countries who want to do what Russia is doing. And if Russia's successful, will these begin to do it? And will we end up in a World War III? That's the fear. And so, but in spite of all that fear, will we be faithful and steadfast? Will we continue no matter what happens? Because after all, what's the most they can do to us? Torture us. Well, Christians have gone through that. Kill us. Well, you just send me to my glory earlier. There's nothing they can do to us to remove from us the promises of God. By the way, that's essentially, in many ways, what Peter is going to write about in 1 Peter. And we're going to talk about that in a moment. And I mentioned that about death in Revelation 2, 10 and 11. He told that church, do not fear what you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison, that you may be tested. Now think about this. He told, as these letters went to all the churches from John, having seen this revelation, and he tells them, some of you are going to go into prison. Well, their prisons were controlled by Rome. That meant Rome, whatever caused them to be thrown into prison, Rome was going to be their oppressor in that. And he says, and for 10 days, you're going to have tribulation, troubles. Well, it'll only be 10 days. Whew, that'll be good. But then the very next sentence, he says, be faithful unto death. That's not a coincidence. 10 days is probably symbolic of dying. Because the very next thing he says to them is not only that you're going to be tested by being thrown into prison, have this trouble for 10 days, you better be faithful until you die. He was telling them, some of you are going to die, as some of them already had in some of these churches in this area. And so he says, you be faithful until you die, and I will give you the crown of life. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. The one who conquers will not be hurt by the second death. He says, don't worry about the first death. Everybody's going to have it. What you need to worry about is a second death. And that one is that the one that separates you. Not the first death is really the separation of our spirit from our bodies. The body that goes back to the dust, the spirit that goes, as scriptures would talk about, to the grave or to Sheol. What we are really ought to be afraid of is that our spirit is separated from God. Because apart from God, we are nothing. And we are would be, as scriptures talk about, in torment. And so, the examples of these kinds of tests, we have to stand up to them and not fall into the fear of these things that keeps us from doing the things that are right, the things that are godly, the things that God has commanded and asked of us. And so, looking back, and I just want to quickly go back to this. We're going to go back to Peter. And in the book of Peter, I want to kind of look at this whole the whole book. So I'll give you a little bit of background to the book itself. The book is given at a time when the Christians are facing persecution. The Christians he's writing to, they've already been dispersed. It calls them the dispersion. Throughout a number of regions. It could be referring to specific people. It could be referring to just all the Christians who are all elect exiles. Because as Christians in this world, we need to have an understanding that we are always exiles. We do not live in our homeland. We all want a nice home, right? We all want a nice place to be able to go to sleep at night. We want it to raise our children and have our families. But we need to understand, no matter how good it is, this isn't home. Our home is not here. And so we are all the elect, the chosen of God. And he's telling us, and he's writing to them, and this might be a very specific group of them who had been dispersed, because that did happen in this time frame. Some of them were kicked out of Rome. This was also a term used for the Jews kicked out in different places as well. And so he's writing to them about their troubles, their difficulties. And so he describes, he says in verse 3, blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. According to his great mercy, he has caused us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance that is imperishable, undefiled, and unfading, kept in heaven for you. It's not here. No matter how much they kick you out, no matter what they do to you, they can't ever get rid of it. It's yours, and it will never cease to be yours as long as you are his. And so he says, it's been kept in heaven for you who by God's power are being guarded through faith for a salvation ready to be revealed in the last time. So no matter what is happening, are you being guarded? I think one of the best videos that I saw, that I witnessed the last few days, was actually a group of Christians in Ukraine in a subway singing hymns. And I thought, that was incredible. That was powerful. Talking about and speaking to their the point. Doesn't matter if we die. What we have is hope. And what we have is joy. And God is guarding us even if we die. He isn't guarding us from dying. He's guarding us through dying. All the way through that. And so that, he says, in this you rejoice, though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been grieved by various trials. And he's referring to the trials they're facing. So he knows they're facing trials, but he's saying, listen, the things and the promises you have never changed because of these trials. These are momentary. They're even, in terms of the bigger picture, they're even small. But he says, so that the tested genuineness of your faith, more precious than gold that perishes though it is tested by fire. And so we look at gold. The way you get really fine gold in your rings or your other jewelry is by them taking gold dug out and then burning it off and getting rid of all the junk and having pure gold. But your faith, tested through the fires, is better than that is. Because it's going to last. Gold won't. Now, that's not comparing our flesh with gold. Our flesh doesn't last as long as gold, but our spirit is eternal. And gold is not. It is an element that God will destroy and get rid of. And so he reminds them of these promises in the midst of this testing. He says, so coming back, so that the tested genuineness of your faith, and I'm going to skip the parenthetical, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. The testing we go through has a purpose, and it has results. When we are tested, it reveals the strength of our faith. And I talk to you a lot about, I think, the idea and the word to, when you think about faith in the Bible, you really should be thinking about the idea of trust. How much do you trust God? And when you're young, that's hard to do, to trust Him with everything. But as you go through life, the goal and the result and the plan is that the more you see, the more you endure, the more you overcome, the more you realize God is all that matters to me. And so I'm looking forward to, as you are, that praise and that glory and that honor, that entrance, as Peter even writes in 2 Peter, at entrance into that heavenly kingdom. And he says, though you do not now see him, you believe. Let me go verse 8. Though you have not seen him, you love him. Though you do not now see him, you believe in him and rejoice with joy that is inexpressible and filled with glory, obtaining the outcome of your faith, the salvation of your souls. The saving of your flesh is not in God's plan. It is the saving of your souls that God cares about. And it's the saving of your souls that you need to care about. And I need to care about. We need to not get so fearful and worried about the troubles and difficulties of this life that we forget what's far more important. And that is our souls. And that's what he's trying to help them see. And he goes from this, and he begins to talk about the salvation. And this is why he goes in. I'm not going to go through a lot of this, but I'm going to go through the whole book because I want you to show you how from the beginning to the end, he's talking about really the same thing. But I'm going to skip a bunch of things that he teaches, but I want to just kind of highlight for you the progression of his letter. Because sometimes in this in the reading and teaching of scriptures, we get so finely tuned on little verses or little passages that we forget that this is a one letter to a group of people to help them read the whole thing and get the whole picture at one time. And he says, this is why your salvation is why you were called to be holy, to be a holy people for God. And that's what he goes in and through the rest of chapter 1. And and he reminds them that, you know, all flesh is like grass, and its glory like the flower of grass, and it withers, and the flower falls, but the word of the Lord remains forever. And this is the good news. That, yeah, our flesh won't last very long. And nothing will change that. Doesn't matter. There's some doctors I watch a lot. They're focused on longevity of life. You know, trying to live well to 100. Okay, so you get an extra 20 years. What would that matter if you lost your soul? It's pointless. In fact, it's meaningless in the big picture of things. In fact, dying at 20, as heartbreaking as it is when we see people do that, and we've all known people who've done that. I know the people in this congregation have known them. It's hard. But another 60, 80 years, what does that matter in comparison to the glory of God? It doesn't. And we need to remember that. That's the point he's trying to get them to see. And he goes on and he says, you are living stones and a holy people. You are the priests and the temple of God. And you will stand with him forever. Because God, people cannot take that from us. That will never not be true as long as we remain with him. And so he goes through that. And he talks about how, you know, the example of Jesus. And he comes down to finally, though, this is how you need to behave because of these things. And he talks about submitting to proper authorities and just having a submissive attitude towards everybody. Being willing to listen, being willing to follow, being willing to go along, whether that is the authorities, whether that is our relationships, whether that is just having to endure persecutions and attacks and being killed because you're going to do the right thing. Because it goes into the idea, you don't submit righteousness to ungodliness. You don't say, well, I'm not going to practice righteousness because the ungodly has asked me not to do that. No, that's the very test in Judges 3. When those other kings and those other peoples challenged them and tested the faithfulness of the Israelites, were they going to practice righteousness or were they going to fold to the temptations of the world? That was their test. And it is always our test. Every generation gets that test. Make no mistake. You will not ever be out of that test. And so he goes on and he talks about suffering for righteousness' sake, just like Jesus had done. We're not doing anything. He hasn't asked us to do anything he didn't do. He suffered for righteousness' sake, and so should we. And he goes into then in chapter 4. I'm just going to read, you know, a couple of verses there. He says, since therefore Christ suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves with the same way of thinking. For whoever has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live for the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for human passions, but for the will of God. That's our challenge. Every single one of us, from the youngest Christian here to the oldest, that is the challenge before us always. Do I put on Christ every day? Do I get up in the morning and realize that I clothe myself with him today? Not just actions. That's also how I think. That's what he's telling me. It can't just be what I do sometimes. It has to be how I think all the time. And so he then goes on and keeps talking about these things, and he talks about suffering as a Christian at the end of chapter 4. He says, beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you, as though something strange were happening to you. But rejoice insofar as you share Christ's sufferings, that you may also rejoice and be glad when his glory is revealed. If you are insulted for the name of Christ, you are blessed, because the spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. But let none of you suffer as a murderer or a thief or an evildoer or as a meddler. Yet if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in that name. For it is time for judgment to begin at the household of God. And if it begins with us, what will be the outcome for those who did not obey the gospel of God? And if the righteous is scarcely saved, what will become of the ungodly and the sinners? Therefore, let those who suffer according to God's will entrust their souls to a faithful Creator while doing good. That last sentence in verse 19 is one of those key things that we ought to remember. And it says, our whole purpose is to entrust our soul to God and to practice good. As God's people, that is what we were called to. All the time, regardless of the trial, regardless of the difficulty, regardless of the challenge, will we face it and will we stand up and be steadfast? And that's what he's talking about. And he comes down into chapter 5. And you might think, at first glance, you think, well, chapter 5, he begins to tell the elders in the churches how to help all of the people within them. And all of that's good. And he talks about they need to be examples to the flock. They need to set the example for others to look to and say, I need to do that too. And he goes on, but I want to come down to that last section. After he told them to clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility toward one another. For God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. And he says, humble yourselves therefore under the mighty hand of God, in verse 6, so that at the proper time he may exalt you. I don't know when that proper time is. I don't know when it will come. Because that's the idea of a proper time. Jesus came at the proper time. Did he come when all the people expected him to come? Did he come when they all wanted him to come? Do you think, how many of the Jews do you think wanted him to come in 400 BC? But he didn't come in 400 BC. How many of them wanted him, you know, at 100, 200 BC? He didn't come then. He came when God knew it was right. And why, whatever standard God has for knowing the right time, I trust his judgment over mine. And so for all of us to understand that the right time, he will exalt you. But until then, we are his chosen, but we are exiles in a foreign land. We travel through a place that is not our home. And so he tells us, cast all your anxieties on him in verse 7, because he cares for you. He understands that we're going to have anxieties until that day that we can be exalted. But he is urging us to keep going on. Talk to him about your struggles. Talk to him about your worries. Talk to him about your fears. That's exactly what Jesus did in the Garden of Gethsemane. We talk about the garden, and you know, he goes out in the upper room that before. He kind of partook of the Lord's Supper, taught about the Lord's Supper. He then sent away Judas to go do what he needed to do and do it quickly. And then he takes the rest of them and goes out, you know, to the Garden of Gethsemane. It's a mountaintop of an olive grove. And a place where he spent a lot of time with his disciples. And where Judas ultimately kind of brought the troops to arrest him. But he took the rest of them, went out there, took three of them, and he says, like, I want you guys to sit and pray with me. I want you to watch. I want you to watch and pray. I'm going to go over here. I'm going to pray for a bit. And he's asking God, you know, to take away, you know, he's praying, you know, please take this cup from me. But, and a really critical thing in all that Jesus prayed, but nevertheless, not my will, but your will be done. Nevertheless, I can say everything. I can talk. God says, tell him your fears, tell him your anxieties, tell him your worries, tell him your desires, tell him what you want, but commit that I'm going to do what God said to do, regardless of whatever happens. So if God says no to all of my stuff, all of my requests, I've made a lot of requests for Ukraine and for an outcome there. I have prayed for and hoped for that Russia ultimately essentially fails in their attempt. That is a lesson that not only specific, and it really isn't all of Russia. I don't think this is all the people of Russia. This is probably mostly just the dictator of Russia. Probably almost exclusively the dictator and the oligarchs of Russia. And I hope they fail. That's my prayer. But what if they don't? The promises haven't changed. Because we see that happen over and over again, where we think the better side lost. That's actually one of the questions that the prophet Habakkuk asks God. How can you use worse people to punish people who aren't as bad? I don't know. And I don't know what the outcome will be. I can pray it and I can say it, but I know nevertheless, no matter what, God will be with me and he will guard me. And that's his promise to us. And that's what it means to be a Christian. And he says, be sober-minded. So clear thinking is what sober-minded means. Be watchful. Look around. Look at the problems. Look at the difficulties. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. My understanding is the way the lions typically get to pick off some of the pack is by roaring, getting some of them afraid so they run. And they get separated from the group. And then they're able to pick them off. Because the lions don't go into the whole pack. They pick off the edges. So they themselves don't get kicked with hooves. And we need to be careful of that same thing, of running away in fear. He says, resist him, firm in your faith, knowing that the same kinds of suffering are being experienced by your brotherhood throughout the world. And after you have suffered a little while, the God of all grace, who has called you to his eternal glory in Christ, will himself restore, confirm, strengthen, and establish you. To him be the dominion forever and ever. Amen. That's what he's talking about. God will always rule. And I don't know why or how long we have to suffer a little while. For some of them, I think suffering a little while was going to be the rest of their life. But for the glory that waits, that's okay. It struck me when I was a really young Christian, this passage, that he is going to strengthen us and help us after we've suffered a little while. It reminds me of parents who are going to punish me because I've done something wrong, but send me my room to think about it for a while. And you sit back there and you kind of wish they would come right away and get it over with, right? Instead, they kind of wait. And it's like, oh, why am I suffering this? Because it's like you're just imagining all the things that might happen to you as you sit in the room kind of waiting and going, oh no, I'm in trouble. And I don't know why God allows us to suffer a while and why his little while is sometimes a very long while to us. But I know he has promised and he gave his life to show me he has dominion forever and that he will guard my soul and he will save me to the uttermost. We're going to go ahead and sing a song as we close out today. I appreciate everybody's attention today, and I hope those are words that might encourage you, in spite of the troubles of the world, to be faithful and strong, courageous, and to press on. That's our theme of the year. Regardless of what has happened, we press on. That's what Paul talked about, what he urges us to do. So we're going to go ahead and sing this, More Than Conquerors, which is a really important passage, especially Romans 8 talks about it, some other places as well. And this idea of more than conquerors actually means the idea of hyper conquerors. We are just like exceedingly conquering. It may not look like it in the world, but that's the reality. And that's the truth that cannot be always seen. But that's the truth that we have to understand by trust in God. And so as we sing about that, as you think about your own selves, your own life, and your own anxieties, your own worries, if you need help, please reach out to us. We will help in any way we can. Let's go ahead and stand and sing.